Hello, 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 and welcome to the Velvet Studio, home to Ottawa's Queen Media. And my name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
I tend not to introduce us.
Yeah, you forget often, yeah.
I'm like, oh, you all know who I am. And
we like to hope, yeah.
Yeah, we like to hope. It's true. And I'm sure some of you folks know who we are, some of our devoted listeners there. Now, we have a really interesting topic this week. A topic that was all up in the news.
You say that every week, that we have an interesting topic.
Well, I might be biased.
Okay? Yeah, you're very biased.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Haters gonna hate.
Yeah. So what's this week's topic?
We are talking about seduction.
Mm-hmm.
And how Rushdie, we're not going to really dwell on him, but...
Are we going to talk about seduction or are we going to talk about Rushdie? Because they're...
We're going to talk about...
They overlap only very slightly.
Well, we're going to talk about the very, very slight overlap.
Uh-huh.
And then move swiftly on to not talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the gist of it anyway.
All right.
Now, you actually have been studying seduction.
Yes, I have.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
About my project in general or about the research that I've been doing?
The project in general.
Okay. So this is actually one of the rare instances where I'm going to talk about my research on air. Well, at least in detail, because I think I talk about my research every so often. But anyway, so yeah, I'm doing my PhD in cognitive sciences, and I am studying seduction. And you might be wondering, how do you study seduction in a cognitive environment? Well, the lab that I work in, they do computer sciences and artificial intelligence. And specifically... we are building models of action selection. So it's kind of like decision making, but it's a little bit, it's like a step lower than decision making, where usually we model how an expert does a thing. So an expert in the situation, how do they know what to do next? So the example that we often like to bandy about is people who are playing video games, who are really good at playing video games. They may not necessarily think about what they're doing, at least not in the sort of conscious sense, but they are selecting what they're going to do next. And you have all these like overrides and things like that. So you could be, I don't know, if you're doing a first-person shooter, you could be shooting some dude in the head with a sniper rifle, and then some exploding thing runs up to you. So you have to stop what you're doing, switch to the thing that's going to explode, and then after that, select what to do next. Same thing with seduction. What do you do in the moment? How do you know... how does someone who's good at seduction know what to do next? So first what we have to do is understand what seduction is. Then we have to pick it apart. Then we have to figure out what the methodology is, like what actually is involved in seduction. And as far as I know, nobody's actually done this from a scientific perspective before, at least not the way that I'm doing it. There's a whole bunch of bits and pieces where people have studied individual portions of it, like interpersonal communication or the relationship between personality and relationships and things like that. So it's not like I'm doing this in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
I am bringing a lot of things in, but yeah, so I've been studying seduction quite a bit. And as a part of it, I've been reading pickup artist manuals, which is very interesting. Some of them are as garbagey as you've heard them to be. And others are actually very interesting little nuggets of wisdom that are... Some of them are poorly written, but have a good kernel to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, no one's actually really studied the methodology of seduction, at least from a scientific perspective, this is what I have to work with. You always have to start somewhere. And why not popular literature? You know, it's as good as anywhere else, especially when you have people who don't even know each other who are building similar models. So you get something out of that. So at least for today, my sort of expertise that I'm lending here is the fact that I have read a lot of the seduction manuals.
And we'll be talking about what those different seduction manuals suggest, what the different theories. We'll also be talking briefly around construction of masculinity and how that intersects.
Oh, God, yes, especially with Rushdie.
Absolutely. But first and foremost, I want to get this... out of the way very quickly because
context, in case somebody doesn't know, yes, who Rushdie is,
because I don't like the guy and I think he's abhorrent.
Yes.
He is a US blogger.
Mm-hmm.
Who has actually written a number of books. There is a great clip by a BBC documentary called Looking at Extremism.
Mm-hmm.
One of the episodes was looking at extremism in terms of pickup artists and so on and so forth.
Right.
And he was reading a book that Rushfi had released in Norway. And one of the excerpts, and trigger warning, one of the excerpts was saying, you know, I took a girl home and, you know, she'd said no. And then, you know, we offered her a drink and then she said no. And anyway, he goes on and recounts about four or five times that she says no. And then she says yes. And then he goes, well, clearly no means no until it means yes, which is absolutely abhorrent. And in Canada, would constitute rape. Like, that's, there's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah.
His approach is, in some ways, illegal and definitely immoral.
And if you are in a situation where someone says no a bunch of times and then they say yes, like, double check. Like, are you sure? Because, you know, they might just be caving into pressure or something like that. Or they might, you know, I mean, people are allowed to change their mind. But double check for sure.
Absolutely.
Before you go into anything.
Anyway, so Rushfi had planned, as I'm sure many of you know, a number of meetings with various, it's like a men's group almost, I suppose.
Sort of, yeah.
In about a couple of dozen cities across North America.
Mm-hmm.
And people found out about it and essentially said no.
Yeah.
The mayor of Ottawa said that pro-rape and misogynistic behavior is not welcome in Ottawa and that he was not welcome in any city-run buildings. They'd originally planned to be in the arts court.
Okay.
And what's interesting that when he tweeted, his tweet was, he tweeted at a number of other mayors, John Tory, Norm Kelly, and a couple of other ones, and all of the other, the big mayors in Montreal, Edmonton, Toronto, they all immediately echoed the sentiment that no, you know, not in our city.
Yeah.
And the public has really rallied around that. In Toronto, a women's boxing club decided to go and gate crash the event.
Yeah.
As it happens, the event was cancelled. Mm-hmm. But,
because he didn't feel safe.
Because he didn't feel safe.
Which is, yeah, the great irony there.
Absolutely. So, yes, you said that in a very small way, does the work of Rushfi intersect with seduction and pickup artists?
Yes.
In what way is that?
Well, okay, so from what I understand of what he espoused, well, first of all, these were not going to be talks. These were going to be workshops.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the professional pickup artist like Rushfi, they operate. They go from city to city. They give workshops. They give talks. They answer questions from people who've read their books. And largely, I mean, it's somewhere between $20 and $80 at the door. Just to on paper, the idea is that it pays for their plane ticket. So, mm-hmm. like, you're getting in this celebrity to speak to them. Of course, you're going to pay for their time. But some of them actually do make a really good living off of this. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the way that intersects with seduction theory is he's actually blending a few models into a new one. So one of them is the real social dynamics model, which is a garbage theory. It's basically a spite model. So there were a bunch of people who were working together on what used to be called the mystery method. And then there was just a fight within the group, and a few of them splintered off and made their own thing, and they just invented theory out of thin air. Not really based on field testing, not really based on actual human interaction of any kind. They never sat and observed anybody. They just made up what they thought was how people interact. Well, specifically how men and women interact. And they sort of blend, well, Rushfi sort of blended that with inner game theory. And inner game theory, by the way, is one of the few theories that I would say at its core has zero misogyny.
Hmm.
It's actually, in a way, it's kind of like psychotherapeutic self-help. The idea is that you cannot hope to attract somebody else if you don't have confidence, if you don't have good, healthy self-esteem, if you don't have a good self-image, and if you haven't found yourself as a person. So one of the things in inner game is there's a very strong emphasis on finding a hobby. Getting a hobby, doing something bigger than yourself, doing something that you put your time and energy into that you don't get anything out of directly, just for the sake of self-development, just for the sake of interacting with the world around you. So inner game is kind of like, it's a way of helping people mature and grow and get confidence and sort of split themselves off from doing what it is that they think they're supposed to be doing. So it's sort of like people who did not high school well, this model is for them, so that instead of just doing all the things they think they're supposed to be doing, they do the thing that in themselves is what they ought to be. And so it's a really nice, at its core, a really nice theory. And then just people who have done this and have found themselves are just naturally more alluring. Inner Game has a little bit more in there about how you should interact with people, but fundamentally it's about yourself. And when you blend the two together, and then you throw in weird concepts of masculinity,
which we'll touch on later.
Yeah, you get the Return of Kings, which is the Rushvi is not the, I don't think he's the creator of the model. I'm not sure about that. I sort of very superficially looked at it when I have better things to do with my time than read into this. But from what I understand, basically, it's sort of Inner Game and it's sort of Real Social Dynamics with this weird masculinity thrown in. And it's, oh, also it has a lot of Red Queen theory. And Red Queen theory, I don't want to get into that too much, but it's a very garbagey pseudoscience evolutionary psychology model that men behave like men because of evolution, and women behave like women because of evolution, and men are supposed to dominate women, and there's all this weird stuff in there. But anyway, so the Return of Kings idea is basically like, pull their hair, drag them back to your cave, and then they will comply, because that is what women are built to do. It's a deeply misogynistic model. Thing is that maybe 100 years ago, it would have worked, but for social reasons, not for anything inherent to humanity. If you live in a world where women are not permitted to work and where women are not permitted to own land, of course, if you just show up looking like a big, swaggery, masculine, wealthy guy, they're going to go with you because they have no other access to resources. So really, the whole idea of the Return of Kings is trying to appear as a man with strong resources and the strong ability to defend them. But generally speaking, in day-to-day life, like, you don't have cattle rustlers coming into your apartment or, you know, local trappers bumping up against your land. Like, it's this whole idea.
We're not back in the feudal era.
Yeah, defending your woman from the elements is not relevant at all in the modern sense, but they've applied.
Unless
this
they're paying the hydro bill, which in Ontario can certainly
it be. Is a full contact sport. Absolutely. Yeah. So, oh. I mean, it's, at its core, I mean, the Return of Kings is basically saying that men need to be like they were in the Wild Wild West and just, like, get a woman, grab her, and then she will comply. And maybe in another era where women were completely powerless because society sucked, that may have worked. But that's, you know, as of, like, the 50s or 60s, we have not lived in that world anymore. Mm-hmm. It's in the modern context, it's a complete garbage theory.
Even before that, the women's movement, before the
Second
World
suffragettes,
War,
yeah,
even earlier into like the 1918, even in the 1800s, there was a strong
like
the
end of could the work, they could live on their own legally. They couldn't go to bars on their own, and they couldn't.
I mean,
you
in those
need an
days,
escort,
would you
yeah.
need to, but want to rather. Anyway. We're gonna play our first song. This is by Anton L. Collins, a out jazz singer. Interesting video. So if you have a chance to look up the song, this is his cover of "Somewhere Along the Way," and we'll be back just after this. In a second.
I used to walk with you along the avenue. Our hearts were carefree and gay. How could I know I'd lose you somewhere along the way? The friends we used to know often smile hello. No love like our love, they'd say. Then love slipped through our fingers somewhere along the way. I should forget, but with the loneliness of night, I start remembering. feeling deep inside that you will always be part of me. So now I look for you along the avenue, and as I wander, I pray that someday soon I'll find you somewhere along the way.
Welcome back to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media. I thought you were going to intro then, but then I glanced over and you were checking Twitter or something. Like,
yeah, like, whatever.
So much for that idea. That was such a beautiful song. I mean, it kind of... The melancholy doesn't help with my sleep deprivation, but overall it was a beautiful song. I like how you were talking about the actor. You're like, I feel like I've seen him in something.
Yeah.
I'm really tempted not to go... He's an actor.
Well, yeah, I know.
That's what they do.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But I just don't know what I've seen him. It doesn't matter anyway. Go on.
Yes. My mother does that all the time. I'm like, oh, I know him. And my mother goes, yeah, because he's been in, you know, that film or that other TV show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, thanks.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, she actually says that TV
yeah.
show. Okay. Okay, yeah.
Like super vague because...
There's actually a documentary called That Guy Who Was In That Thing, and it's about sort of... C-list actors.
Oh.
And how a lot of them like being C-list actors because they can go to a restaurant and get left alone, but they get to live off of acting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty handy.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, we were talking about...
We were talking about the interesting world of seduction. Now, we've already established that Rush of Kings is essentially if Neanderthals or the feudal system was back, which it isn't.
No.
Fact check. Are we in 1812? No.
Mm-mm.
There we go. Problem sorted. And so you should not treat women like if you were in 1812 because that would make you a misogynistic pig.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
They're autonomous agents and subjects of their own lives. If anything else, because the law says so. I mean, if you disagree... You could take that to a Supreme Court justice and, you know, you could...
Well, the back end of a prison.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, you know, like it's if anything else, the law says you're wrong. So that doesn't necessarily, you know, a lot of things are illegal, but not necessarily
anyway,
right. It doesn't matter. Anyway, go on.
One of the things that I found really interesting is how seduction, ignoring Rushfi's corruption thereof, can be an interesting model for... building self-confidence and really engaging in how you communicate with your peers, or in many cases, women.
Well, there's different models of seduction, and it depends on which one you're looking at. Each one sort of specializes in a different slice of the process. So the mystery method, also known as Neil Strauss's game, and also known as the new rules, that's Arden Lee's version, but they're all related to each other. They all worked with each other, and they all, what is it called? They all sarged together. And sarging is when pickup artists go out together to study each other and learn from each other. And sarging is actually the name of Mystery's cat. They all have like names, right? And so Sarge was his cat, and the cat would go out and just come back and be like, "Where the hell were you?" And it was just like, so sarging was just being a tomcat going out in the neighborhood is where the, anyway, it doesn't matter. So yeah, the three of them went out together quite a bit, and they would study from each other, and they had, their model focuses on the sequence of events. So when you first meet somebody, you have this amount of time to establish this, and then you move on to this chapter where you do these techniques, then you move on to this chapter where you do these techniques. And they have it all timed out so that from when you first meet someone, it's 6 to 10 hours until you can have sex with them.
If they want to, of course.
Yeah, if they want to. Yeah. But 6 to 10 hours, that's cumulative. So that, like, if you have a phone call for half an hour, that counts, that sort of thing. But 6 to 10 hours is actually, that's like 3 dates. Possibly four. Yeah.
So you don't mean 6 to 10 hours in the course of one evening.
No, it's not.
Get there at 7 p.m. and by 3 in the morning, yeah, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah. It can be, but the only way to make that happen is if you bounce. And bouncing is when you change venue so that it feels like multiple dates. Because if it's one long session, then it doesn't you don't get the same amount of intimacy by switching it up. So they have a whole bunch of techniques on how to break up time and how to slice time in different ways so they perceive you in different lights in different situations. And it's very much based on the sort of the process, the timing, the actual method of doing it. The juggler method is a completely different method. It's actually one of my favorite ones because it has zero misogyny, and it's actually kind of beautiful. So again, they all use pseudonyms. There's one guy who went by the name of Juggler. He went around, where was he from? I don't know. One of the major American cities, but not New York. Anyway, he went around
Chicago
to all the, maybe we'll say Chicago. I don't think all it right. was, but we'll say Chicago. And he went to like the Central Park there and just watched old people who had clearly been friends for like 30 years or more, just hanging out, sitting on park benches, talking with each other. And he studied how people with deep intimacy communicate. What kind of things do they talk about? What is their body language? How do they communicate? Where do their eyes look? That sort of thing. And what he was trying to do is figure out how can you replicate that feeling? Like when you first meet someone and you have that feeling that you've known them for years.
Yeah.
Can you stimulate that? Can you reproduce that at will? And he actually figured it out by studying all these people who've clearly known each other for a long period of time. And he would just go up to a total stranger and just start behaving as if he's always known them. And this sort of like instant intimacy, that was his major seduction technique, where people just felt very comfortable. Now, he also was on a 6 to 10 hour period. So it was a lot more slowly paced, and it was a little bit more about getting to know people, and it was a little bit more about opening up. So because it's fundamentally about intimacy and interpersonal contact, it's sort of like it's a little bit more, I don't want to say pure, but it's the intent is less grody, let's say. But anyway, so you have all these different methods. Why am I talking about this, by the way? What was the question? My brain has just gone off. I've gone into a Heather world.
No, I think that was the question. What are the different methods?
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah.
You
made me think. I'm like, what was the question?
Right. So the self-help portion of it, they don't all focus on the self-help portion. Some of them, I mean, you need to practice a lot. The mystery method and the juggler method, you need a lot of confidence to be able to do that, to be able to pull it off naturally. So they have a whole bunch of sort of games and tricks that they do to...
Can you give us an example? Like,
okay, so one student of mystery, I can't remember the guy's pseudonym, but anyway, he wore a ill-fitting yellow polka dot summer dress, duct tape a dildo to his head, applied very poorly purple lipstick and went around a mall trying to kiss people.
Wow.
And he said, after you do that, you don't fear anything ever again because everyone is looking at you.
Yeah.
They're looking at you. They're judging you. They think you're a crazy person. And after doing that for 3 or 4 hours, it's like your ability to be self-conscious just snaps in half and never fully heals.
Hmm. And so We're not recommending that people do that, though.
That's a little bit, you know, sexual assaulty. But something like that. There's a lot of activities that seducers, that pickup artists suggest, where you do something that is so insanely embarrassing that you will never, ever, ever recover. Hmm. You do that until you feel a little bit traumatized, and then you do it a little bit more. And then what happens is you just stop caring, and it never really grows back. And you just have this ability to just go up to really awkward situations and just roll with it. Because something that all of the good theories of seduction have in common is, at its core, everything is okay. So if you do something and it doesn't go your way, that's okay. If you approach someone and they turn you down, that's okay. If you have an opinion and they disagree, that's okay. Like, it's all about being very chill and relaxed and just sort of let things go. The Return of Kings is very different in that sense because you're supposed to be dominating and enforcing yourself onto the situation. So that's not really, I mean, from that sense, it's not really a seduction technique. It's just sort of a dominance technique. Mm-hmm. Return of Kings would actually be fantastic for pro-doms to study, including the women, actually. So, I mean, if you're into that sort of, like, BDSM sort of scene, I mean, it really fits into that sort of overexerting yourself, overextending yourself, imposing yourself, that sort of thing. But generally speaking, no, it's a little bit more chill than that. And getting to the point where you can be chill, it's very good for people with anxiety. I mean, there's a lot of people with social anxiety or personal anxiety, interpersonal issues, who studied under pickup artists, and their entire lives got better because, you know, now they're at work and their boss says something and they disagree, and now they're capable of disagreeing. Mm-hmm. So it can be a very empowering thing to go through, so long as you don't pick one of the douchebag models, basically.
And I think we've definitely established at least one of those.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier that the model is about being chill with things, you know. So let's say I go to the Dom, let's say. Maybe that's not a very good choice. As the bar. I go to a bar.
A bar, okay.
Yeah, yeah. The liquor store or something like that. Mm. And I approach a lady.
A lady, yes.
I approach a lady.
As you would.
Hypothetical scenario. I approach a lady, and I strike up a conversation, mm-hmm. and the lady goes, I have to go powder my nose, and leaves.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think anyone powders their nose anymore. But, you know, how would somebody going through these pickup artist manuals, I suppose, react to that? What would the recommendation be?
Okay, so a lot of them, their answer to that is you shouldn't be interested in someone who's not interested in you.
That's a great, great lesson.
And, I mean, if it's someone in your personal life, like, sort of a friend of a friend or someone who you've known for a while who you like and you're trying to get them to see you as a potential partner, it's a completely different story. But in terms of going up to strangers in bars or striking it up with someone you don't know, if there's no early connection or if they're not willing to give you a chance, it's probably not going to work very well. So whatever, just roll on.
So is the idea then it's success by numbers almost?
It is very much a success by numbers thing. Also, actually, there's somebody who wrote a letter of complaint to Mystery that his technique does not work in the American Southeast.
Oh.
Because people there are much more gregarious. If you go up to a stranger, they will almost always at least give you 30 seconds of their time because there is that sort of like that Southern hospitality thing is not fully a stereotype. It is a bit of a stereotype, but like I've spoken to a lot of people who've passed through the Southwest. I've met quite a few people from the Carolinas and from Alabama, and they do like they will give you at least 30 seconds of your time to prove that you're worth ignoring or paying attention to. And so a lot of the techniques are actually, they're seen as being overly aggressive and they don't work in the American Southeast because people are much more gregarious. But yeah, so in terms of speaking to a stranger, absolutely. Like if they're not interested, you shouldn't be interested in them.
And we'll be talking a bit more about this in just a few minutes. Next up, another song from, this is Elton John's wonderful Crazy Night album, and this is his song In the Name of You. We'll be back just after this.
Got a penny in my pocket and a dollar in my hand. Better drop it in your tin cup if you were a one-man band. If I could make a million on some TV show or the roulette wheel in a great big casino, go ahead and do it, but only if I knew I could go ahead and claim it in the name of you. Whatever tricks I use, I will find a way to claim it in the name of you. I got my favorite hat with that snakeskin band. When you need a little shade, bottom of the ocean, I would surely die to find the oldest oyster with the biggest pearl inside. Go ahead and do it, but only if I knew I could go ahead and claim it in the name of you. Whatever words I choose, whatever tricks I use, way to claim it in the name of you. I claim a contract, I claim a tune, all the undiscovered territory out there beyond the moon.
And we are back with the Velvet Studio, home to what was Queen Media. And that was a new track by Elton John. I'm really kind of digging his new album.
It sounds a lot like his 80s stuff, to be honest.
It is. It's very upbeat and very lively, and it's like, it's distinctly Elton John.
Yes. Yeah, you that's
can't,
for sure, yeah.
You can't hear that and go, is that Prince? Like, there's no, one does not confuse that particular track.
It's definitely a song written by a rock pianist.
That's so true. Mm. I saw his interview with James Corden recently. That was a lot of fun. on the late night show with James Corden, British comedian. Okay. Anyway, whatever. Not that it narrows it down. The Americans are importing them by the bucket.
They really are, yeah.
But we are talking not about James Corden, but we are talking about seduction.
Yes.
Now, we've already established that Return of the Kings is not, in many ways, what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, a little earlier, you were saying that if I had gone into a club and spoken to a lady.
A lady.
And a lady said, no, thank you, I have to go powder my nose, that I should only be speaking to ladies who are interested in speaking to me. So if they're not interested in you, don't push it, just, you know, move on. So it's almost a game of numbers at that point.
And be polite as well. Be like, oh, okay, yeah, have a nice night.
Or see, I think that's where... see, being polite and rolling with it isn't necessarily what always happens. You know, I've seen men who do not...
They don't take rejection well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's a skill.
It is.
It really is.
You are very good at it. I have seen you talk to, like, 7 people in a row, and they're like, no. And you're like, cool. And you just walk away.
I'm really good at picking myself back up. And it's really a skill that you don't know you have until you look back on a scenario and you're like, okay, yeah. Because we have conversations about Grindr.
Oh, God,
and you seem to think I Grindr quite well. Well, I did until I was happily coupled.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just, I would strike up a conversation with 20, 30 people.
Mm.
And maybe 6 of them will answer me.
Mm.
And out of maybe those 6, perhaps 2 will sustain the conversation.
And of those 2, only 1 uses full sentences.
Yes. But I mean, and that really boils down to, yet again, the game of numbers. And a lot of people will just dismiss you offhand.
Yeah.
Some of them will give you the 30 seconds, like the Southeast.
Yeah.
And then eventually you land on someone and you're like, okay, we can hold the conversation. Yeah.
And in your mind, like the answer that a lot of the PUAs, the pickup artists, have is you should have sort of like a, oh, well, your loss kind of a feel, but not a smug your loss kind of a feel. And there's a difference between just acknowledging like you're losing out on something versus saying like you're losing out on this. Like it's a huge difference. One of the things that most of the really good models have is to be non-goal oriented. You're not seducing someone to get something out of them. You're seducing someone for the joy of seduction. So something that Neil Strauss said is that you shouldn't flirt with pretty ladies because you want to have sex with them. You should flirt with pretty ladies because pretty ladies are fun to flirt with.
Huh.
And if you have that attitude where you're in the moment just enjoying talking with them, if they don't go home with you, that's fine because you got what you were there for. You were there to flirt with pretty ladies. If they do go home with you, that's also fine. I mean, like, obviously there's that recurring theme of just chilling and rolling with it and being okay with it. But definitely sort of being non-goal oriented. And that's actually one of the easiest models of seduction there are. It's called The Tao of Steve. And there's a movie called The Tao of Steve. And it was written by a woman. So technically it's a woman's theory. And The Tao of Steam is, what is it? Be awesome, be desireless, and be gone are the 3 rules of The Tao of
Steve. Be gone? Yeah. Like leave?
Yeah.
Okay.
So be awesome is don't talk about how cool you are, or don't talk about yourself, demonstrate. Don't say, I'm amazing at billiards, I could beat anyone. Just be like, do you want to play billiards? And then you play an awesome game, and they're like, wow, you're really good. And you're like, yeah, I know. Not smugly, but yeah, like, yeah, I worked hard on it. So yeah, I should be.
There was some skill development.
There was some skill development, yeah. The be desireless is exactly the idea of don't be into it for the result. Be into it for the joy of being there.
Mm-hmm.
And then be gone is actually be available, but don't be too available. Like absence makes the heart grow fonder and all that sort of thing. So be there, but also, you know, every so often step back.
Maybe not too aloof.
Not too aloof. There's a French word for this, and it's called coquette, which is shy. But it's playing coquette, faire la coquette, or jouer la coquette. It depends on who you speak to. Anyway, it's sort of like playing hot and cold, where you're playful and then you're distant, but not mean. Just sort of like flirty, flirty, flirty. Oh, I'm kind of busy. Oh, hey, what do you want to do? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm having a bad day. You talk, I'll just sit here. And it's that sort of like going back and forth. You sort of rock them off, so rock them off balance, so that they always have to be in the moment, and they can't really predict what's going to happen next. Which sort of leads into that question that you said you were going to ask.
Yeah,
me
I was
going
to ask. a lot of this is interesting. A lot of it does speak to self-confidence things and being able to deal with rejection.
Yes.
I think it's a big thing that men don't do so well.
Yeah.
You know, but speaking from for the ladies,
yes,
or the people who are being targeted, it may not just be ladies. Is there an element of trying to hoodwink them, like getting pulling the wool over their eyes and feigning to be interesting and good at billiards when really, you know, that's not the goal?
Well, the number one thing to bear in mind, and this is true in every single model except for the horrible ones. Don't be something you're not, because there's nothing that is as big a turnoff as catching someone on a lie or finding a hypocrite. So the best way to be consistent is to be yourself. Be a slightly more awesome version of yourself, especially at first. There's a fine art to controlled vulnerability, because you want to be vulnerable. You want to be sensitive, and you want to appear human and available, because if you're too awesome, they'll be like, how am I supposed to fall in love with this god of a man? But no, like, you need...
I'm sorry, gentlemen, that happened.
you need to show some vulnerability, but it shouldn't be something like, let me tell you about this new medication I'm taking for this horrible trauma that I've experienced. Like, I don't have a kidney. And so, like, this is the kind of thing that can wait, you know?
That's a second date sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a second date sort of a thing, yeah. But you do need to be vulnerable and just say things like, well, you know, I don't really feel comfortable in those kinds of situations. But, like, if you want to do it, I'll do it for you. Like, that's kind of like, that's a positive kind of vulnerability where you're showing that you have a weakness, but also at the same time showing that you're willing to sort of work through it or work on it. But anyway, so the slightly more awesome version of yourself is not necessarily hoodwinking. I think most people understand that you need to show yourself, but minus a few of the tragedies at first. There is an aspect to hoodwinking, but part of it is it's against people's better nature to speak with people. So when you first meet someone, generally speaking, you will form an opinion of them within the first 30 seconds. This is not seduction theory. This is psychology. Okay? They actually have done a lot of studies on this sort of thing, where by looking at body language and appearance, tone of voice, accent, depending, like in England, like bloody hell, you can tell where someone's from down to the block sometimes from their accent.
Yeah.
So people will make a judgment of you within the first 30 seconds. Sometimes people won't talk to you at all because they have stranger danger. They just assume that you're after something. People start off with assumptions that are very human and very natural, and it's really hard to judge people for it because you probably also do it too. And a lot of the seduction techniques are designed to circumvent that. But that said, the mystery method, because it's all about the order of events, there's actually an entire section on it just on the first 30 seconds and then the 2 minutes after that. And then after that, like the rest, like the sort of like fifth to 10th hour occupies as much theory space as the first 30 seconds and the 2 minutes after that. Because the first 30 seconds, you're trying to circumvent those natural biases that are very self-destructive. A lot of people who are single for long periods of time or who keep dating the same people who resemble all their shitty exes, who are like, they're dating the same bad person again and again and again. Yeah. What they're doing is they're obeying their bad biases. And so a lot of the seduction techniques are designed to sort of work their way around those biases through what is essentially trickery. And I'm not gonna deny it. There's a little bit of trickery. The 2 minutes after that is the process of sort of bringing them into your frame. So the frame is sort of the way that people view the situation, and how to frame a conversation is a very big part of a lot of the different schools of seduction, of how do you get people to understand you are not speaking to them to have sex with them. You're like, how do you get them on the same page as you? So the framing problem is the second thing. the trick is, and all of the good ones, not the douchey ones, agree that as much as these techniques are incredibly important, you need to knock that off after about 3 minutes. Stop it. Okay? You've already gotten around people's biases. Now you have to be yourself. Mm-hmm. So at first, hoodwinking is kind of important, but that's because people do stupid things that they know are stupid, and they see it in other people, and they're like, this guy won't even talk to me, and I just want to know what time it is. And I actually do just want to know what time it is. But he's like, no, I'm not going to talk to you. And it's this...
I actually made our friend Phil.
Yeah.
I met him at a bus stop because I just struck up a conversation asking what time it was.
Yeah, but you didn't actually want to know the time, though.
Well, that's another story.
Yeah.
We're going to listen to Brandon Ski's So Bad, and then after that, we're going to be talking about how seduction and masculinity intersect. And if you visit our website, check out a 15, 16-minute interview that we did with one of Ottawa's leading burlesque and male drag performers, Kendra and her girlfriend, talking about street harassment and how all of this translates sometimes very dangerously into street harassment. That'll be available on the website www.velvetstudio.ca shortly after today's show. Anyway, this is Brandon Ski with So Bad, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Every day, every word that I say, lip service. I'm okay, I'll deny what's beneath the surface. Without you here, I don't know what I'm doing. Can't hide my fears, I try, but I'm in ruins. I could sit and lie to you, but what's the point, what's the use? You can see I'm blind for you. You break the rules and I'm the fool that wants you badly. No matter what you do, I still love you madly. With your every move, I want you so bad.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media. And we're still here with myself, Luke Smith.
And Sebastian.
And we've been talking about seduction.
It's a weird episode because the host is interviewing the co-host.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Which is kind of working. We're going so well, so far so well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so good. Whatever. Yeah. You know, it's all good. Brandon Ski, by the way, is a openly gay artist. His new EP is coming out soon. I think he's based out of the States. Might be me. I can't remember. So check him out. And before we go, before we wrap up today's show, we were going to talk about how you know, seduction and the kind of the examples that are being set by the mystery man and the juggler and the cat and all these other nom de plumes that don't make any sense.
Yes.
You know, what kind of role model are they providing? What example of how to perform masculinity are they giving?
I don't know if they actually are. One of the things that has come up by a few authors is that seduction is fundamentally a woman's game. And the idea behind that is that for the longest time, the way that men would seduce women is they would just say, I'm rich and powerful and I own land. And that would be that. Whereas women who had no access to resources or land or power or sometimes titles, depending on where you are in Europe or the world, they would actually have to use their intelligence, their wiles, manipulate the situation, actually get to know people, be able to do things that appeal to them, that sort of thing. So seduction is viewed as being very feminine. And there's a few famous seducers who actually sort of totally embrace that. So Casanova, who actually was a real person, was described by a lot of his peers as being effeminate, but he made that work for him. Mm-hmm. He also actually the two things that he was famous for, as well as being a famous seducer, once he actually convinced a woman to sleep with him, he would wear a condom, which in the 18th century nobody did. So not only could you have an affair, but you wouldn't get pregnant from it. And the second thing he would do is wrap a silk ribbon around his hands so that when he tapped on your window to let you know that he was there, no one in an adjacent room could hear him.
Oh.
And it was the silk ribbon. It was the sensuality, the whole like developing the situation, and then give a rose with the thorns plucked off and all that sort of thing. Like a lot of that came from Casanova, who's a real guy, and the diary is out there. And a lot of the stories in the diary were confirmed by other diaries from other people. So like it's amazing that this guy was real. But in terms of masculinity, it's a different kind of masculinity. And this is actually something that I've mentioned to you before, and so the listeners on the internet have, or the radio, have no context for this, but the idea that you can learn a lot about masculinity from reading Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, but that's a different conversation. There's different kinds of men. And to say that there's one model of masculinity, I think, is very disingenuine. Mm-hmm. And so a seducer needs to be a very specific kind of sort of sensitive, gentle man who's sort of accessing what, at least in the West, is considered to be very feminine wiles of paying attention, basically. So just one last thing before we sign off. So this is an actual psych experiment that people did some time ago. So again, this is not seduction theory. This is psychology. They got men and women to read facial expressions, pictures, listen to voices, and determine what mood that person was in. And the women across the board scored higher. And then what they did is they offered them remuneration for correct answers. So if you get the answer correct or close to correct, you will get paid actual money for every time you correctly guess the mood of that person. And then the men scored the exact same as the women.
Oh, really?
Yes. And the explanation that they came up with and has been confirmed elsewhere in other similar experiments is that men are not motivated to pay attention to that sort of thing. They don't need to because they have privilege.
So this
whereas women who lack privilege have to pay attention to that kind of thing, which is also why, and they did this elsewhere as well, homosexuals are more sensitive than heterosexuals, and non-whites are a little bit better than whites. Especially in mixed environments, and this was all done in the States, where this is actually relevant information, as opposed to a little bit more pluralist country. But if you're not motivated, you're not going to notice. And so this whole idea about men being less sensitive to the emotions of other people than women, it has to do with culture. But so accessing that part of like that sort of stereotypically feminine nature in the West of being sensitive to other people is actually very core to a good seduction, whereas the whole Roosh V thing of it doesn't matter, just dominate, that's not seduction, that's just overpowering.
Absolutely, it's the absolute opposite. Anyways, catch us next week when we're looking at the importance of sex stores to promoting GLBT culture. Great episode lined up. Do you want to quickly introduce the song that we play out with? And
I actually don't know the song. He's just getting me to do it because he can't speak French. It's Cœur de Pirate, and the song is called Adieu.
And she was actually in Ottawa just last week, so check him out.
Tu ris si mal, tu ris de vide, des taches de vin sur ta chemise, qui a de boutons éclatés sur ton corps qui me repoussait. Tu fais l'amour en deux poussées, l'amour le manque la tournée, et pendant que tu t'articules, moi je soupire et toi tu m'aimes. Le menace t'es parti, parce que je hurle quand tu chantes tes souvenirs. Eh bien chérie, plus rien ne me parle, mais dis-moi adieu demain, mais dis-moi adieu en chemin. Va voir mes faux, je n'en pense rien. Je t'ai aimé, mais je t'assure que c'est la fin. Crois-tu pouvoir enfin me dire tu veux bien qu'on reste amis? Non, c'est gentil, ça va comme ça. Mes amis, j'en ai plein déjà. Je n'aurai donc plus à t'entendre rentrer la nuit quand j'attends l'aube qui arrive en poussant les airs. Moi, je me lève et toi, tu meurs. Menace de partir, parce que je hurle quand tu chantes tes souvenirs. Eh bien, chérie,